Oh, to grime the coconut.
Grime the coconut.
We're criming inside the coconut right now. Back again. It's me, Amanda.
Me, Morgan.
We're dropping some heavy shit on you again.
Heavy shit back to back.
Yeah.
Buckle up.
Try not to, but shit, fuck. It's hard not to.
How the cookie crumbles.
Yeah. Funny story. I did mine on Rodney Alcala, the dating game killer.
I also did one on Rodney Alcala, the dating game killer. So we are one story short.
Yes. We're even now, but I finished doing this article and I texted Morgan. I was like, you won't believe what I just wrote about. Like, this is crazy. And she was like, who? And I'm like, Rodney Alcala. And she was like, you were going to shit yourself. And I was like, please, please, please don't tell me.
Listen, I want y'all to know I was not in the fall. I shared this Google Docs with her weeks ago.
I didn't read it. And so I was like, no, that's on me. That's on me. But we talked a little bit. We decided that I would do it. That's just how it is.
How the cookie crumbled this time.
It is. But Morgan might have a lot to insert into this story, which I am all for. All for. Anything I miss, I want her to say. So we're good. We're good. Thanks for joining us tonight.
Yes, thanks for coming.
This one is just a little heavy, just so y'all know. Rodney Alcala was born in San Antonio, Texas, to a Mexican-American couple, August 23, 1943. Rodney's father moved his family to Mexico in 1951 when he was 8 years old, abandoned them 3 years later, to which his mother moved herself and Rodney back to the States in 1954 to Los Angeles. Did you also have a sister?
Mm-hmm.
I didn't see anything about that, but I read it in yours.
Yeah, Wiki. Wikipedia is the source for everything.
Yeah, for sure.
I don't give a shit what your school says.
No, Wiki's the best. I always use Wiki. Mm-hmm. Also, P.S., donate to them because they deserve it. I donate to them all the time.
Me too.
That's where I get all my shit from. Without Wiki, you would not have Crime of the Coconut.
We don't do further research.
Someone to read the Wikis to you. When Rodney was 17, he enlisted into the U.S. Army, and 3 years after that, he went AWOL after what was reported to be a nervous breakdown involving hitchhiking from Fort Bragg to his mom's house. His mom's house. Which, if you travel directly by car, can take over 10 hours, and on foot takes a little over 8 days. After this event, a military psychiatrist diagnosed Rodney with an antisocial personality disorder, which I've been drinking some fucking wine.
The wine's getting to you.
Like, it's hard to enunciate. After this event, the military discharged...
Words, Amanda. Use your words. Enunciate. It comes from the chest.
I'm losing it. Okay. Oh, fuck. After this event, a military psychiatrist diagnosed Rodney with his antisocial personality disorder, which discharged...
Do you want me to read this? God damn.
How do you say discharged? Okay. And for medical reasons, he was later diagnosed with narcissistic personality disorder, borderline personality disorder, and malignant narcissism with psychopathy and sexual sadism.
Sexual sadism.
With comorbidities. Sexual sadism is the condition of experiencing arousal and extreme response to pain, suffering, humiliation, and other things. Comorbidity is when many psychological disorders kind of overlap in each other, creating this web of fuck up this. Like, you got a lot of shit.
I mean, he had a lot of shit anyways, and it was all, like, mashed together, like, really disgusting mashed potatoes. Yeah.
But after leaving the Army, Rodney went and graduated from the UCLA School of Fine Arts. And I thought this to be pretty different from others on the podcast because usually following dismissal from the military or army, whatever, their lives go down the tubes pretty hard because you don't really have anywhere to go. Your family hates you, whatever. But Rodney seemed to have a goal in mind for a normal future, or at least what seems to be at face value. Rodney's first crime was committed on December 25th, 1969. He's about 25 now. An eyewitness called LA police after seeing him lure an 8-year-old girl into his Hollywood apartment. When the police arrived, they found the girl alive, but she had been raped and beaten with a steel bar.
A poor girl.
Rodney was nowhere to be found. After this event, Rodney escaped to New York and studied film under Roman Polanski in New York University under the alias John Berger, B-E-R-G-E-R.
Trust me, that literally matters. He couldn't come up with anything more like...
In 1971, Rodney got a counseling job at a New Hampshire arts camp for children under the same alias but a different spelling, John Berger, B-U-R-G-E-R.
How original. Like, I mean, he couldn't think of anything else. Sam Nothing Smith. Else. But he was a Tom very educated Johnson. Man. Very educated.
Yeah. When he changed the spelling, I have no idea why he did it, but it was maybe smart. Maybe he just forgot how to spell his fake name. But you say he was intelligent, so maybe he was like...
Oh. I think he really did it just to, like, not, like, lure the police, but, like, kind of, like, throw them off
a almost scent. Like, what is that? Like, when he fakes somebody out kind of way, like, there's no way he would change his name to something so similar.
You're right, exactly. You wouldn't think that's him.
Yeah. In June 1971, Cornelia Criley, a 23-year-old flight attendant, was found raped and strangled to death in her Manhattan apartment. But her murder remained unsolved until 2011. That's the longest time, 40 years.
Yeah.
Thankfully, the feds were not absolute imbeciles and added Rodney Alcala to the top list of 10 most wanted fugitives in early 1971. The camp recognized him pretty quickly, and Rodney was extradited to California to await trial. But the little girl he raped, her parents moved their entire family to Mexico, so with no one to testify against them, he wasn't able to be convicted to rape and attempted murder, so he sentenced to only 3 years on the charges of child molestation.
I mean, I understand not wanting to put your kid through that, but at the same time, I'm like...
It's a sacrifice. You...
It really is a sacrifice because he's going to go and do that to somebody
yes,
else.
Yes, exactly.
Somebody else's kid is going to have to go through what yours went through.
Yes, because you're too...
It's like a selfless sacrifice.
Because you're too afraid of conflict. Just fucking do it. It happened. Own up to it. It happened. Do it for other
There's
people.
No going back now. At this point, yeah. You need to stand up.
Rodney was paroled after 17 months and less than 2 months after his release. He was rearrested for assaulting a 13-year-old girl by offering her a ride to school.
It's hitchhikers, man.
Yeah.
Fucking, they're picking these kids off the side of the road.
Yeah. He was then again paroled after serving only 2 years. After his second release in 1977, he's 33 years old now. His LA parole officer allowed him to travel to New York. Investigators now believe that a week after Rodney's trip to New York, he killed Ellen Hover, 23-year-old daughter of a popular Hollywood nightclub, Ciro's. She was also the goddaughter of Dean Martin and Sammy Davis Jr. Her remains were found buried on the grounds of the Rockefeller Estate. I did a little asterisk here. Remind me to get back to you on this. Why this is so fucking fishy to me. All right.
Okay.
But so far, Rodney was not under suspicion. Why did his LA officer allow him to go to New York?
That's what I said too in mind that I wrote. I was like, I don't understand.
He is a repeat offender, and you're like, yeah, okay, whatever. And then he killed Ellen Hover, the daughter of a popular nightclub, and was the goddaughter of Dean Martin and Sammy Davis Jr. Fishy to me.
Yeah.
Additional and later victims include Jill Barcom, an 18-year-old runaway found rolled up like a ball in an L.A. ravine in 1977. Georgia Wixton, 27, bludgeoned in her L.A. Malibu apartment in 1977. She was actually originally thought to be a victim of the Hillside Strangler, but later DNA tests disputed that. Charlotte Lamb, 31, raped and strangled, found in the laundry room in an L.A. apartment complex in 1978. Jill Parenteau, 21, killed in her L.A. Burbank apartment in 1979. All of the bodies found positioned in carefully chosen positions. The time lapse of this whole story is so fucking jumpy. I tried to, like, stack it in order because the Wikipedia fucking jumps around everywhere.
Oh, yeah. That's fair.
So I try to do it, but I also...
Were you already... Was I supposed to remind you to go back to that asterisk, or are we good?
I have another asterisk somewhere about it, so hopefully okay. I will remember.
All right, picking back up where we left off.
He was also suspected, but not convicted. In Washington, Rodney was named a person of interest in the unsolved murders of Antoinette Whitaker, 13, in 1977, Joyce Gaunt, 17, in 1978. San Francisco, investigators claim they are confident that Rodney was responsible for Pamela Lamson, 19, in 1977, whose remains were found naked and battered near a hiking trail. And in Wyoming, Christine Thornton, 28, 1977, her body was found in 1982, but was not identified until 2015. Rodney admitted to taking the photo, but not to killing the woman. Rodney was 73 and too ill to make the journey to Wyoming to stand trial on this charge. So a lot of his victims weren't even charged. He wasn't even charged due to lack of evidence. His active status as a convict waiting for execution or apparently his crippling age, which is honestly sickening because even more victims outside the scope haven't even been identified. And who knows how many total victims he had. So he's charged in multiple states, but there really isn't enough evidence to convict him.
Right.
Besides in California.
Right.
In 1978, he worked as a typesetter for LA Times and was interviewed by members of the Hillside Stranglers Task Force. And so they were, like, trying to find out who this guy was.
Well, he pointed all signs. A lot of his murders were confused as Hillside Stranglers because of the timeline, A, the location, B, and C, the horrificness of his killings.
Yeah. They were investigating known sex offenders. Rodney was ruled out as a Hillside Strangler, but was arrested and served briefly for marijuana possession. During his time at LA Times, he had convinced hundreds of young people, both men and women, that he was a professional fashion photographer and took photos of people for his portfolio. In 1978, Rodney was a contestant on The Dating Game, which was a popular game show at the time. The host, Jim Lange, introduced Rodney as a successful photographer who got his start when his father found him in the darkroom at age of 13, fully developed. Between takes, you might find him skydiving or motorcycling. This obviously was a big fat fucking lie. In his spare time, he was actually raping and murdering people. Another contestant described Rodney as a very strange guy with bizarre opinions. Rodney actually won the game and a date with a bachelorette who subsequently refused to go out with him because he was creepy.
She literally saved her own life.
Yes, for
and I sure. hope she realized that, like, later on. She's probably like, fuck, I almost went on a date with that creepy ass man.
Yeah, good on her because she might have died if she had.
Good for you, Cheryl Bradshaw.
I accidentally zoomed in. Pat Brown, a criminal profiler, noted that Rodney killed at least three women after his rejection and said that might have been a provoking factor.
See, rejection, it causes the spree.
Yes, there's a theme tonight. A woman who allowed herself to be photographed by him in 1979 said that his portfolio contained spread after spread of naked teenage boys, and most photos were sexually explicit. Many of his subjects remain unidentified, and police fear that they may have victims of cold case files.
You know what, like, is so crazy about those photographs is the fact that he literally was photographing these kids with parental consent. I don't know they knew how deep it went, and these kids probably just never spoke up.
Well,
but he was very fortunate that none of these kids were like, hey,
I'm naked.
I took these photos naked.
Well, yeah, because his parents want their kids to be models, and they're like, just do whatever he wants. Just do it.
Right.
And then it goes too far, and they're like, well, my mom said it's just how it is.
Right.
And they don't know.
Well, investigators also were known to say that rejection wasn't something that he would take well, and serial killers don't understand rejection. They think that something is wrong with that person and or girl, and quote-unquote, she played themselves. Me, she played hard to get.
Yeah.
And that's what causes that slippery slope of a downfall, I mean, and just to a murder spree, a rape.
It's never their fault.
No, never. I mean, they're very narcissistic. Almost all of them have narcissistic personalities.
An LA Times coworker said that Rodney would share his portfolio with other coworkers and said, I thought it was weird, but I was young and I didn't know anything. And said when she asked him why he took the photos, he said their moms asked him to. But a lot of the girls in the photos were naked. Or girls and boys. He took a lot of male photos too. In 2010, Huntington Beach and New York City police departments released 120 of Rodney's photographs to the public in hopes that some could be identified. About 900 additional photos could not be released as they were too sexually explicit. 21 women came forward to identify themselves, and at least six families claimed that they believed that they recognized loved ones who had been disappeared long ago and were never found. In 2013, a family member recognized a photo of Christine Thornton, 28, whose body was found in Wyoming in 1982, And as of July 2021, 110 of the original photographs remain posted online, and police seek the public's help with further identifying victims. So if y'all want to go on there, I guarantee you're about our age. You're too young for that shit. But if anybody's like 40 plus, like, I mean, go for it, I guess.
Especially if you were like from Wyoming, New York, or
California,
or you had family from there, like, go look.
It's worth a try. Victim Robin Samso, a 12-year-old girl, was found 12 days after her disappearance on June 20th, 1979, on the way to her ballet class in the LA foothills. Robin's friend said a man had approached them on the beach and asked to take photos before her disappearance. And upon a sketch of the girl's description, Rodney's parole officer recognized him. They searched Rodney's mother's house and found a receipt for a storage locker that contained Robin's earrings. Charlotte Lamb's earrings were also found in that storage locker. After he was arrested and held without bail, in 1980, he was tried, convicted, and sentenced to death, but was overturned by the California Supreme Court because jurors had been improperly informed of his prior sex crimes, whatever that means.
Well, I mean, technically, like, if you're in court, you can't be like, oh, yeah, by the way, this guy also has been to jail for X, Y, and Z. They're supposed to be informed of prior convictions because it may strew their opinion on so-and-so. Which, granted, even without that, I feel like they would have felt the same.
It's slimy. Whatever the fuck. Whoever cares what time it is, he fucking did it.
Yeah,
whatever.
I mean, obviously he fucking did it. I don't see why it matters.
In 1986, the second trial was held, and he was again convicted and sentenced to death. A Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals panel nullified the second conviction because a park ranger witness who found Robin's body because he had been, quote-unquote, hypnotized by police investigations, which is another reason why I saw this is fucking fishy, another fucking thing of fucking asterisks, because he fucking knew people.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, there's no way he didn't know people.
And we're gonna go to fucking, what's that guy's name? The guy that died, his girlfriend's going on trial, fucking molester, pedophile, rich-ass man.
Oh, the one on the island?
Yeah.
Jeffrey Epstein.
Yes, Jeffrey Epstein.
He knew people. Yes, he knew people. That's how he's gotten away with it for so long.
And he went, and he wasn't part of LA Times, and he did photographs and shit. He just was the dumb one that was so upfront about it. And that's why he's getting away with all this shit, is because he knows people, and they're like, listen, we know you're having sex with kids, but we're going to try to get you out of it.
Yeah, well, I mean, like, look at all the people that were with him. I mean,
yeah, like, you literally showed all your fucking sex pictures to people that worked there, and they were like,
That's weird, but we're not going to say anything because we don't know any better.
Yeah, okay.
Okay, right. Yeah. If you see sex pictures of children, you go tell somebody.
Unless told otherwise, you're getting fucking paid on the side. No, fuck that.
Even if you're getting paid on the side, you go tell somebody. You
collect Jeffrey that, Epstein had a fucking you collect sex that child bag. Trafficking ring. His girlfriend is about to be on trial. Don't fucking forget that. I hate that shit.
But, like, you collect that bag and you still go snitch. I don't care if somebody calls you a tattletale.
Well, they'll kill you.
No, you're going to win protection, bitch.
No, they'll kill you. It's deeper than that.
Listen, selfless sacrifice.
Yeah, exactly. But at the same time, public's not going to do shit about it. They forget about it 2 weeks after because you talk about Kim and her new boyfriend for like 3 weeks and everybody fucking forgets about
Kim
it.
Kim Kardashian saw fucking
everybody fucking
Megan Fox
about it.
And
no
Kendall Jenner. She's like, I gotta give me one of those sleazy ass white men.
Yeah.
Like,
and everybody forgets about all the shit that's happened. Yeah. Woo. All right, I'm trying to get off my soapbox here for a second. In 2003, more victims were found, and prosecutors entered a motion that Robin's case and other cases should be joined and tried as they have eyewitnesses and DNA evidence connecting Rodney to them. In February of 2010, Rodney Alcala stood on trial on 5 joint charges. For a third trial, Rodney decided to act his own attorney and took the stand in his own defense.
He was ballsy.
Yeah, for like 5 hours, and played roles as both investigator and witness, asking himself questions.
Answering for himself in a different voice.
Yes, in a different voice and answering them. He showed jury his appearance on The Dating Game and tried to play it off like the earrings found in his locker were his. But an actor who competed against Rodney told a reporter that earrings were not socially acceptable for a man to wear in 1978, and he would have noticed if he had worn them.
Right. That would have been, like, a big, like, eye-catching
thing.
But shit,
this guy was, like, sitting in the stand and being like, Mr. Rodney Dean. And he would, like, get up and turn around. He's like, I don't think I...
But also, like, the earrings, like, even if he were to say, like, oh, those were mine, no worries, regardless, they had the children's DNA on them.
Oh, yeah, for sure. What an idiot.
Like, Charlotte and Robin's DNA was on those earrings, whether he said they were his or not. Like,
yeah.
Explain that, then.
On the other four charges, he simply claimed that he could not remember killing them. Less than 2 days later, the jury convicted Rodney on all five counts of first-degree murder. Rodney's first victim, the girl who was beat and raped but did not die, was a surprise witness at his penalty trial. In March 2010, he was sentenced to death for a third time. Noted that he also published a book in 1984 called You, the Jury, asserting his innocence in the Robinson-Samso case. Rodney Alcala died of unspecified natural causes while on death row on July 24th, 2021.
So recent.
A few months ago, at the age of 77. On Wikipedia's list of serial killers by number of victims, it says he has 8 proven victims, but 130-plus possible victims between the active years 1971 and 1979. There's a whole timeline laid out at the end of the Wikipedia article of his, Rodney Alcala, more accurately describes the timeline of events, because I know the story is bouncing all the fuck over the place.
That's just kind of how the wiki was. But also, did you know that he filed 2 lawsuits against the state of California's penal system for a slip and fall incident, as well as for them refusing a low-fat diet to him?
Yes, yes. I didn't want to give that the time of day.
Really. I was like, what? I mean, literally, you were trying so hard.
What a fucking idiot.
Like, I mean.
Oh, my God. No, I didn't even want to indulge that, really.
I mean, and the fact that he was literally too sick to go to Wyoming. I don't give a fuck if that man was sick. Ship his ass to Wyoming and convict him.
That is a common thing also. Like, you start to get old, like 65, 70 plus, and they're like, oh, we're going to convict you on this other murder because you did fucking millions of them, so you have to go to this state to be convicted of it. And they're like, oh, I'm so old and tired. Well, that fucking sucks.
Yeah.
You killed people. Get on the fucking plane and go and get your fucking sentence,
But the
bitch.
Other thing, too, is, like, I think at that point it didn't matter, because he was serving life anyways. So regardless of
but
how...
But it matters. It matters. It doesn't matter to him. It doesn't matter to the court. It matters to the family.
Oh, no, I agree. I think the family definitely should have had that closure of either A, watching him fucking die.
Well, who cares? Even if he died on the plane to the conviction, I'd be like, that's good enough for me.
Yeah, facts. Facts.
Like, I don't care.
You want to eat that hot-ass honey?
He's not comfortable?
I don't care if he's comfortable. Okay. I don't fucking care. I can't believe he died that recently. When I was typing this, I was like, oh my gosh.
I hear my
He's also tried in March 2011 in San Francisco for a cold case of a 19-year-old named Pamela Jean Lamson, who went missing after she went to meet a man to take photos of her. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's just like, up until his death, he was still being convicted of past things that, I mean... What
fucking
a sick fuck.
Not up and die.
I mean,
not
yeah.
Not up and die.
I still can't believe he got on the dating game. I'd like to know, like, more backstory on that. Like, how was that application? How did they choose him?
In his free time, he does skydiving, motorcycling. It's like...
No, he does raping and killing.
Yeah.
Like...
Awful.
No skydiving. No motorcycle. He probably didn't even have his, like, bike license or anything. Like... He was like, let me just bullshit this some so I can find a nice girl to take home, rape and murder.
Yeah.
Like, thank
good
God.
Good on her, though, for being like,
good on her
what
being
the
like,
fuck?
He's fucking weird. But then it's like, then why did you pick him?
We don't care. It's fucking TV.
Well,
shit,
I know,
they're
I
all
know,
probably
like,
molesting kids anyway.
Have you ever seen The Dating Game?
A few times.
My thing is, like, he answered all these questions, then she saw him, and she was like, you're fucking weird.
Because it's an act. It's all
yeah,
acting.
I mean, you don't see what they look like or anything like that.
I don't
that.
Trust any fucking people in celebrity life.
You never know anybody, ever. That's like, I'm a big fan of Crime Junkie podcast. And I actually just got this new hoodie that has, like, all of their life rules down the sleeves. And, like, one of them's like, you never really know anyone.
No.
Ever. You don't know anybody. You can't trust anybody.
I agree. I'm not driving you home tonight. You can sit on the street.
Let me go hitchhike for William Bonin. Come get me, William.
Like, I'm kidding. Oh, fuck.
Just
okay.
Kidding. She's taking me home.
I am. I'm taking her home. All right. Thank you for listening.
Sorry. I know it's kind of like
exciting episode.
All over the place. Yeah. I mean,
this is a wild episode, like back and forth, back and forth. So, I'll give you our plugs.
Crime the Coconut on Facebook and Instagram.
CrimeTheCoconut@gmail.com.
And CITC Podcasts with an S on Twitter.
Yes. So thank you for listening so much.
Thank you for tuning in. It's good to be back.
I also want to shout out again my friend Cody Miller.
Oh, yeah. Go Cody.
Who is letting us use his studio right now, Sound Labs in Kent.
Kent, Ohio.
Yes, Kent.
Is that doxing ourselves?
I don't think so. But his email is cody.miller.music330@gmail.com. He's doing all of our audio and editing for us. And
so nice.
I love him so much.
Thank you, Cody.
I really do.
For everything.
What an amazing opportunity. So thanks for listening.
And next week we'll get into William Bonin again.
Part 2.
Some real deep shit.
Yep. All right. Thanks.
See you next time.
Love you. Bye.